In today's world of continual disruption, heightened competition, and increased division, what kinds of leaders are best suited to take business forward?
Rebels are people who, rather than going for what's comfortable and familiar, they stretch themselves and they go for what's uncomfortable.
That's Francesca Gino, award-winning expert on the psychology of organizations. Francesca, a professor at Harvard Business School, is the author of Rebel Talent: Why It Pays to Break the Rules in Work and Life. Rebels often have a bad reputation, but Francesca argues that rather than thinking of them as troublemakers or contrarians, we should think of them as catalysts for positive change and growth.
We often think about rebels as those annoying colleagues who slow us down at work, or people we would call show-offs or troublemakers. There are also lots of people who are breaking rules that hold them and others back.
I'm Meryl MacDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. I'm thrilled to welcome Francesca Gino. I'm so excited today to have Francesca Gino with us. Francesca, you have spent your career researching what most of us are trying to learn through trial and error. So I'm so excited to hear so much about it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Obviously, you've written many books, Harvard Business Review articles, and you know, one of your recent books is Rebel Talent. And in Rebel Talent, you talk about why it pays to break the rules. What is a rebel?
I was inspired to write this book because I think we think about rebels the wrong way. The book is really about rule breaking as a constructive rather than a destructive force. We often think about rebels as those annoying colleagues who slow us down at work, or people we would call show-offs or troublemakers. And what I wanted to say is that there are also lots of people who are breaking rules that hold them and others back. And really, these are the people the book wanted to focus on. They're people who basically bring about positive change in their organizations.
It really struck me when I read the book, because at one time I was asked to coach a very senior leader at a big beverage company. And one of the complaints was that he didn't conform. And I was like, well, I thought that's why you hired him. And it was why they hired him, but then they didn't know what to do with it.
But that's an interesting story, because I see that quite often, that lots of leaders are saying we need new perspective inside of the organizations, we need new blood. And then when they do bring in people with different perspectives, they don't quite know what to do with that or how to manage these individuals. And in fact, I think maybe sometimes without realizing it, there is a sense from these new people joining who want to bring in a new perspective or their new blood and their new contributions, a sense, an urgency even, or a pressure to conform to the ways of working inside of the organization. And I think that that's alarming.
And what do you have advice for leaders who bring someone in to really disrupt? What could they do to support that person better?
I would be sure to ask a lot of questions and actually give space to that person to bring in their ideas and their contributions. What I would also keep an eye on is what I refer to in the book as perspective. Is this person bringing in new ideas, a new voice, but fundamentally with a respectful approach towards what's already there? Are they aggressively pushing for their way of thinking, or are they asking questions, listening to the usual ways of working, and then they actually contribute to what's already there? So they're being disruptive, but with a respectful approach rather than an arrogant one.
That's really great advice. And I know you also had made the point that not all rebels are created equal. Are there certain success traits beyond what you just mentioned that would make one leader different from another?
Yeah, in my book and in the research that I've done over the last, really, over a decade on effective rebels, I identified five ingredients, if you will, that make Rebels effective. And they are novelty. So Rebels are people who, rather than going for what's comfortable and familiar, they stretch themselves and they go for what's uncomfortable. They're curious. So rather than taking things for granted or accepting the usual way of working, they keep asking questions and they come into situation with the same type of curiosity that we had when we were little. They are authentic. So rather than conforming, they find a way to bring their contributions and voice and preferences forward. They have this broad perspective and they also leverage differences between themselves and others. So these are key ingredients. And to the extent that we can have them all, that we can be effective rebels. And in my many, many years of working with organizations looking at effective versus ineffective rebels, often the ingredient that seems to get people off track is this talent of perspective. Are you coming into situations being open-minded and willing to listen to others rather than just forcing your point of view?
And have you found that there are effective ways to screen for rebel behaviors in the hiring practice?
Absolutely. I often talk about the individual talents as talents that require different type of questions or different types of way of understanding whether the person has that talent versus not, or whether they need to develop it. So when I think about perspective, for instance, one of the examples that really stood out for me is the example of a founder and CEO of a small startup in New York. Her name is Rachel Chong, and she is leading a startup called Catch a Fire. And what she does when she interviews people, she asks them questions about the business or about struggles that the business is experiencing, and then she pays really close attention to the answers. And what she's trying to do is understand whether the person has a very different ways of working through the problem or reasoning through the problem. And then she basically hires people who she knows from the outset are going to disagree with her. That requires a lot of courage, but that means also hiring based on perspective.
And what have you found in terms of the balance of having somebody who is disrupting the organization and how to keep that really constructive and productive?
In organizations where this constructiveness, rebelliousness is really embraced in the right way, there is a lot of clarity on the part of leaders on what the mission is and where the boundaries might be. In fact, when I think about a great example of constructive rebelliousness, the person and the organization that comes to mind is an organization that is in a very regulated environment and where the organization is very hierarchical and actually also very bureaucratic. And if anything, the culture is do not rock the boat. This is a group in the Air Force, Squadron 99 of the Air Force, about 3 hours north of San Francisco. And what is really interesting about this group is that about 2.5 years ago, a new leader came in and said, look, if we really want to win the next war, if we want to work effectively and be effective at what we do, we need to do things differently. And he almost empowered his team to be true to that statement, but he also stated the mission up front, which is preparing his group for combat. And he was 100% clear. And he was also clear on where the boundaries were. So he asked everyone on his team, often these are pilots who fly 70,000 feet above the ground to take intelligent pictures. So they fly spy planes, basically. But he basically told them where the constraints were. He asked all of them to go study regulations because fundamentally what he wanted to see is different ways of thinking about the work, innovative ways of thinking about how to solve problems, but within the stated regulations. And if you look at the number of innovations that have come out from that group over the last 2 years, it's quite remarkable. And it just took one leader coming in, being clear on the missions, being clear on the boundaries, and then asking for basically constructive rebelliousness.
I think that's really interesting because there's, you know, been a lot written about the fact that innovation or creativity both come from constraints, not just wide open spaces.
Absolutely. And again, if I go back to that particular group in an environment that is in fact very constrained, if anything, they've used the constraints to their advantage. I've also never met pilots or people more general who can spell out every single regulation in their context. They really studied them carefully.
That's so interesting. You know, then what that makes me think of is there are so many companies today going through massive transformations and really trying to become something very different or new, which of course requires a different culture and new behaviors. Yet they struggle with how to, they have an organization of people who've been doing the same thing for a long time. And have you seen examples where leaders actually shifted to become rebels within their organization?
So it is interesting that often it's easier if the person comes through as it was the case of this particular leader. So a recent example I can think of is a CEO and founder. Well, now he's a president and founder of a company called Henco. It's a logistic company in Mexico. And he, in a sense, unfortunately, went through a health crisis. So he had something that was equivalent of a stroke. And the fact that he survived made him think differently about his legacy and also the type of workplace that he wanted to create. And he ended up coming up with a slogan for the company culture called High Performance Happy People. And what that is really all about is making sure that he has an environment where people find joy in the work that they do, despite the fact that they might experience stressful situations. And so it was a way for him to have a moment of reflections that unfortunately was triggered by a health crisis. I was inspired to write the book partly to give it to leaders as a way to have that moment of reflection. So I've been lucky enough in the last couple of years to be part of cultural transformations in organizations that thought that the message of the book could be leveraged to go in a different direction. So I'm not sure whether these organizations have been affected, but I think they are definitely on a good journey.
And it was helpful in your book as you really outlined the various attributes, as you mentioned, of successful rebels. And I think it does give people a very good path.
And I'm also hoping that it makes people realize how easy it is to not be a rebel. Part of the reason why I love the label rebels is that in order to be constructive rebels, basically we need to fight against our human nature. So when I think about novelty, most of us just feel good with what we know, feel good with the comfortable and familiar. And the fact that rebels need to stretch themselves and become comfortable with uncomfortable, again, requires going against human nature. But I was trying to make the case that that's a good direction to go into because there are also some benefits that we tend not to see at the outset.
Right. And then, of course, there's the counterforce to that that, you know, you talk about in your book that research shows that as we age, we actually, our conformity increases.
Absolutely. And not only that, we tend to hammer it into others as well. When I think about some of the examples that I've used in the book and that were part of my journey as I was studying these rebels, I've also tried my best to find examples across all sorts of contexts. And this is to say that rebelliousness, in the way I talk about it, so constructive rebellious, is not just for startups or organizations that are in very innovative spaces, but constructive rebelliousness is for every organization.
And you just recently published a Harvard Business Review article on collaboration. It sounds like a lot of these themes are very highly related to one another.
Absolutely. And in fact, some of the inspiration for working on that HBR article was what I have heard from many different leaders as I was, in a sense, flying around and going into their organizations with the message of the book. What I was intrigued by is the fact that rebels often do not work in isolations, but they work with others to bring about positive change. And I was interested in drilling down on their collaborative skills, if you will. And again, often leaders have the wrong intuition. I think that no leader would question the importance of change, innovation, and collaborations to get there. But often they're less clear on the path to get there. And I have seen way too many organizations just putting collaboration into their mission statement or adding it as a corporate value, or sometimes doing some interventions that are more architectural. So you take down office walls, and that per se or on their own, these are interventions that won't work. What we need to do instead is really understand human nature and how all of us can be trained to be better in our interactions with others.
And you talked about the training. I think that's such an important point because, as you say, so many companies now have collaboration as a value.
Exactly. And the same thing is true with this quest for innovation and creative ways of thinking. We need to create the right environments as leaders where people are going to bring out this different talents.
One of the things you also were talking about was rediscovering the experience of inexperience. I thought that was a really interesting concept as well.
Yeah, you've probably worked with a lot of leaders who do have a lot of expertise and experience under their belt, which is fantastic. The problem is that often experience can blind us. One of the people who, to me, is a great example of a person who's been able to acquire experience, accumulate experience, but never forget about the importance of stay humble and keep on learning, is Captain Sally Sullenberger. On a cold evening in January of 2009, where he ended up ditching a plane with 155 passengers in the Hudson River. And what I find remarkable about what he did is that if, like me, you find yourself reading the accident reports, you're going to see the conversation as it was happening during that flight. And you discover that he was really under a lot of pressure. First of all, time pressure. He had 208 seconds to make a decision. That's the time that he had between when he discovered that there was no thrust in the engine and when he ditched the plane in the Hudson River. And also, it was under a lot of stress because you have quite a few passengers in the back of the plane. And most of us as human beings under that type of pressure, we just go to the obvious answer, which for him would have been land at the closest airport, but he didn't. He kept considering alternatives. He did that quickly, but he kept broadening his view. And when I was able to talk to him, really had the privilege of talking to him, I discovered that by the time the accident happened, he had a ton of experience under his belt. Over 30,000 hours of flying experience on that type of flight. He had served in the military, so he had experience flying all sorts of planes. He had served as a volunteer, studying previous accidents, so he had a lot of knowledge and data about what can go wrong on a plane. And yet, every time he walked into the cockpit, he would ask himself a very simple question, which was, what do I stand to learn today? How is it that today's flight could be different? And to me, that's just a remarkable way of, in a sense, keeping us honest, keeping us focused not on what we already know, but on what is out there yet to be learned.
And the world's changing so quickly, so much of what we used to know doesn't count.
Exactly. And yet, again, a lot of very experienced and expert leaders often go to the quick answer that they know by recruiting a past experience. And so that's why his behavior and his way of thinking really stood out to me.
And as we're thinking about how we might further encourage a rebel or in novelty thinker, how do you think measurement systems in companies are either helping that or thwarting it?
The way I think about this is measures are definitely important, but are we also creating the space for these talents to come out? So for instance, to be very practical and concrete with one's suggestions, if in addition to giving people performance goals, leaders were to give them learning goals, then what we know from research is that people would be more engaged in the work that they do and also perform better. And this learning goals would also allow them to retain curiosity that is so easily shut down when we enter organizations. And so that's just a very concrete strategies that leaders across any industry, any business could use to, yes, measure performance, but also add something on top of that.
And what would be a good example of a learning goal?
It doesn't necessarily need to be tied to the work. In fact, people might have interests outside of their own work. I have worked with organizations that at the time in which a manager or a leader has conversations with people who report to him or her, they discuss performance goals. They actually have a conversations about learning goals and they ask about the person's interests. So, for instance, a recent one was a person working in HR at a manufacturing firm, and the person was also interested in understanding what engineers do. And so her learning goal was about just that, understanding what, in a sense, colleagues in their own organization approached the work.
And I know you have a real interest in motorcycles, and you've talked about the fact that you're interested whether or not it really applies to your work. But I was thinking about the whole concept of leaning into the curve, which is a metaphor I use often, is really a motorcycle term, I think.
I love that. How do you talk about this principle of leaning into the curve when people have challenges?
When they have challenges, and also what it really takes to be thinking ahead of where your team and your organization needs to go. And it's the dealing with the unknown.
Absolutely. So rather than reacting to problems that occur, being a little bit more proactive in the way you think about situations. Absolutely. It's a great approach that usually curious people and curious leaders tend to adopt more easily. It's thinking differently about what might be rather than just staying focused on the details of what they're doing in the organization.
And just the whole concept, too, that it's so much safer to lean into it than start to back down. And in how so often in, you know, most of my clients are big corporations, but so often in the corporate world, you get going and then you start to doubt yourself and you back up. And that's when you create all kinds of havoc in the organization because people are getting mixed signals.
Absolutely. And that's also an important aspect of what I've seen in effective rebels, especially when they're in leadership position, that they are, in a sense, 100% clear on the missions and they're consistent in the way their behavior signal that they actually care about the mission. If I go back to an example that I mentioned earlier about this leader in the Air Force, one of the things that were really interesting about him is that rather than doing what many leaders in organizations I consulted for or worked with have done, which is having a problem with some aspect of their organization, whether it's culture or something else, usually what happens next is that they throw their hands in the air and say, yeah, but I am not the person who needs to drive change, because they look up to whatever is sitting above them.
Right.
And this leader instead just understood his span of control. It was his squadron, the people working in his group. And then he started taking action. I love that because it brings about change in your sphere of control rather than waiting for change to happen elsewhere.
Right. And people often ask me, how long does it take to create a culture change? And I said, well, it depends. If we all change tomorrow, a day. If we all wait for everyone else, never. And so it's somewhere in between. And I know a lot of your work has been based on neuroscience and behavioral research. If you could choose one human bias that you'd remove to make us more effective, what would it be?
I would probably go with the self-serving biases. And in particular, with one bias that is known in the literature as confirmation bias, whenever we are talking to others, interacting with them on an idea or a course of actions, our tendency as human beings is to focus on information that they're providing that basically confirms that what we're thinking is the right course of action. Or when we ask questions, we ask questions that tend to look for information that, again, confirms what we believe to be right, rather than doing what's most effective, which is to say, is there information out there or any data that suggests that I'm wrong? And I think it's a very pernicious bias, if you will, because it affects the way not only we interact with others, the way we make decisions, but also the way we think about our networks.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is just thinking about your research and all these different themes and how they might be applied to what we're seeing right now as more and more employee activism, where employees are really stepping up and speaking out about things that they care the most about, how their companies are operating in the world, what kinds of work they're taking, what kinds of legislation they support. And what's really been interesting is that where those conversations used to remain within the company walls, and many companies never even had those conversations, they're now becoming much more public.
Absolutely. To me, it's a reminder of the urgency and the need for leaders to really embrace this idea of constructive rebelliousness, this idea of creating environments where people are showing up at their best, creating environments where people have the opportunity of staying curious, experience novelty, experience authenticity, having perspective, leveraging differences. I have met a leader who I admire quite a bit. His name is Brunello Cucinelli, and he's the co-CEO and founder of an Italian organization in the luxury fashion space. And what I find interesting about him is that he has made many decisions as the company was growing to grow on a slower rate, if you will. And the reason for that, despite the fact that others, consultants or investors were suggesting otherwise, the reason why he did that is because he wanted to make sure that he was bringing people along and not creating too much stress for them. And he's often talking about the importance for every leader to really take good care of their people, because human capital is the main asset in any organization. And in a world where employees have access to pretty much any piece of information they want to find about their leaders, again, there is a sense that leaders should pay attention and create, in fact, environment where their employees are thriving.
What do you think about like these large organizations that have 100,000, 300,000 people all over? They have very different values. They care about a wide range of things. How do you have that conversation in the company that really hears everybody, but just by definition can't please everybody?
Yeah. So to me, what this requires is making sure that the values that are part of the organizations, they're actually spelled out in a way that is reinforced through a variety of processes in the organization itself. Meaning, when you're hiring or when you're training or making sure that the manager or leaders these people are reporting to, that they're actually embraced, rather than, again, just leaving them on a wall, hoping for people to actually pay attention to them. When I think about really large organizations, I think that that's what they're all about. You can, like, one that comes to mind is Starbucks. If I think about their commitment to the idea of the third place, is something that is not just talked about by the leaders, but it's embraced and baked into their training and their hiring as well. or if I think about large organization, another one that comes to mind that went through quite a transformation from a cultural perspective recently is Microsoft. But again, it's not a leader who's just spelling out words that become corporate values. Everyone is asked to think about those values and embrace them in a way that shows up in their behavior. So I think it requires, at a larger scale, it requires much more attention, not only from the top, but across all levels of the organizations, and consistency across those levels is important.
And as you think about, those are some of the things leaders need to do, what are some of the things you think leaders most need to let go of?
Control. I meet a lot of leaders who are almost fearful of letting go and trusting the people when they're not watching or when they're not on their backs are going to do the right thing. And I think, again, if you are creating environments where everyone is embracing what the organization stands for, then letting go might happen more easily. But definitely, I've seen a lot of leaders struggle with the idea of going from controlling to empowering, if you will.
And what do you advise them when you see them struggling?
What I tell them is to shift their mindset. For too many people across the globe, work does not feel like a source of joy. It feels like a source of frustration. And I think that's a remarkable opportunity for change. And we're going to see a change, I believe, when leaders are going to take seriously the issue of letting go a little bit more and shifting their mindset and believe that not necessarily if you let go, things are going to turn into chaos.
Well, when you said control, I, of course, was thrilled since that's the whole concept of let go and lead. But then I realized, oops, I just fell into confirmation bias.
That is too funny.
Well, Francesca, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for your time.
I had so much fun talking to you, Meryl.
Francesca offered so many great tips for how to cultivate rebel talent. Here are a few that stood out to me. First, when bringing in new disruptive talent, really take time during the hiring process to understand the person's perspective. Do they express curiosity, or are they aggressively pushing for their way of thinking? Would they respect what's already in place, or arrogantly railroad change? By understanding their perspective, you can gain an appreciation not just for their expertise, but also their approach and style. Second, be clear on the boundaries and conditions you have or could set to spark constructive rebelliousness. Encourage your team to use constraints to your advantage and drive the organization forward. Third, take inspiration from Captain Sully. As an experienced leader who didn't let his vast past experience dictate his capacity for growth, Sully asked himself, what can I learn today? What is it about today's work that could be different? Try this approach in your own work life and see where it leads you. Lastly, don't wait for change to happen elsewhere. Look at what's in your control today and start taking action. Thanks again to Francesca for the fantastic conversation. If you're interested in exploring your own rebel talent, visit Francesca's website, rebeltalents.org. Her rebel talent test gives you an understanding of where you fit in the rebel spectrum, including what comes naturally for you and where you might need help focusing your attention moving forward. Whether you're a longtime or first-time listener, thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love for you to share it with a friend or colleague. Until next time, let go and lead.